You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas, host of the Prompt Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Welcome to the Prompt Pop Show. I apologize for being a little late, but the gentleman before me was running a little bit long, and we record all our radio shows for broadcast on podcast, because if you listen to our shows, we are not broadcast over the air. We are broadcast over the internet. We're a web radio show, and because of our listenership is primarily students and staff at Richland College, and they in the day are, you know, attending class. What most of the hosts of the various radio shows that we do have on KDUX do is record their show, and then for later listening the podcast, and that's exactly what I do. For those new to my show, I have a companion blog to this show. It's called prontpops.wordpress.com. That's prompt, P-R-O-N-K, pops, P-O-P-S, .wordpress.com. And the reason why I highlight that, you can follow along, because what I do is, for example, today I have two segments that I'll be covering. And this show probably could be a short show. Normally my shows are 2 hours, sometimes even three, and on at least one occasion 4 hours, where I have a lot of material. Today I'm somewhat light on the material. I think I can definitely fill an hour, upwards of 2 hours, depending how it goes. So we might get out of here early, which would be a first, because the show is scheduled from 3 to 5 o'clock. And what I was saying, because the gentleman is recording it, he has to stop recording, save it before we can start recording. So that's why I was a little bit late, because I do like to start on time, but I just like to give you that explanation why it was running just a hair late. So you had an opportunity to listen to the music. And that's what we normally do. My show, Prompt Pops, is a radio talk show on current events that are in the news. And that's what I'll be covering. We're a weekly show, so I select events that are, you know, timely, that are driving the news and getting a lot of buzz, if you will, amongst primarily listeners of talk radio shows. What I normally do prior to starting a show, at the very last minute, I do kind of a double check. And today I did a double check, a Drudge Report. And usually it's just to see, is there any breaking news that, you know, maybe I don't want to be blindsided, I want to be at least aware of it. And I did it today. I was in a meeting. So a little background, and I want to mention this. The Richland Chronicle, which is the Richland College newspaper, is still looking for people that are, we need writers, we need photographers, editors, proofreaders, if you will. We also need people to sell advertising. And if you're very good in design, we need assistance laying out the paper. And we have two versions of the paper. We have the print version, which is distributed every Tuesday. For example, this Tuesday, when he came back from Labor Day, we had a paper that focuses in on 911. It's remembering 911. I was fortunate to have an article that made the back cover. And I urge you, though, to pick up the paper. It's all over the campus. And give it a look, because a lot of people put a lot of effort in producing that paper. But we also need more people to volunteer. So if you have any of those skills, would like to sharpen them and practice your skills, no matter what they are, no matter what your interests are, please join us. We normally have our meetings from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock on Mondays and Wednesdays. Now, this week, because Labor Day was on a Monday, we had our meeting on Tuesday instead, and then we had our Wednesday meeting where we go over the past issue, basically a critique, see what we can do better. For example, we had an issue with the color of the photographs on our last issue that we need to get resolved, because we really had a stunning photograph for the cover that looked terrific on screen, but when we got the printed newspaper back, it really didn't do justice to the photograph. Well, those are the types of problems you encounter. And I mention it because you want to get better. And whether you're a writer, I primarily write. That's not my primary interest is talk radio. But I also will write primarily for my blog, but also for the paper if there's a current event that would be pertinent or relevant for both the students as well as the faculty at Richland College. What I will do is really prepare a news story. So, you know, the issue that's currently out, for example, I did Remembering the 911 Responders, and I hope you have an opportunity to read the entire paper, but take a look at the cover. I'm the author of that article. I'm rather proud of it. But the photographs just didn't come out the way we wanted. They were a little off. And those are just technical issues that you'll encounter with any newspaper. And that's why we critique the paper. Because, you know, we look at the layout, we look at the stories, and you get that feedback. And that's what you really need, because you do need practice. The way you get better at anything is practice, practice, practice. And I'm sort of emphasizing that because a couple of weeks ago I gave on-air book review of a book called Outliers that dealt with success. And I think this issue, because I'm mentioning it now, I think the coming issue will have that book review in it, because I sat down with two of our editors that went over, you know, some comments. They liked it, so pretty sure that's going to be in the next paper, and I recommend that book for you. And for those that maybe are pressed for time in terms of can't read a book because they're taking classes, what you can do is go back to some of my past shows and look at the notes, and you'll find a review of that book. Now, what I do what I call my notes for each segment, I provide listeners links to relevant articles. For example, I'll excerpt part of the article. I also have a number of video clips pertaining to whatever I'm going to be talking about today. For example, I have two segments today, so I have two pages of videos. It's not just videos, though. I have articles as well as graphics, tables, graphs, whatever is relevant to the story or the segment that I'm going to be covering. And I emphasize I'm very, very selective. I don't put all the material. There's a lot of material I just leave off. But it's there for your benefit. You know, if you want to follow up or get more information or check out what I'm saying, it's there. I lay out, you know, all my sources. So you form your own opinion. If you disagree with what I'm saying, good. And I encourage you to get involved. You know, either write for the paper if that's what you want to do. If you want to do a radio show, we have courses on, for example, radio announcing as well as radio production, interviewing. If you're radio oriented, if you're more television oriented, we have courses on producing a video show. You can also be in front of the camera if that's your cup of tea, and you know, appear as you could be interviewing people or giving you an update. So there's a lot going on at Richland. I just want to make you aware of it, because I've run what you might be surprising there. I've talked to people, students as well as faculty or staff, and surprisingly, a lot of them are just totally unaware that Richland College even had a radio, a web radio station or a television station, even though they probably pass it every day. We're located in El Paso. The Richland Chronicle office is in El Paso, E-O-20, and right across diagonally is the radio and television show. So drop by, say hello. If you'd like to contribute to either the paper, the radio shows, or television, whatever is your cup of tea. And don't feel you have to be in front of the camera or be a writer. We need people. that, for example, will edit the stories. We need people that will lay out the stories. So depends what your skill set is. It's just a terrific opportunity, and I urge you to take advantage of it for your two or three or how many years you're going to be at Richland College. For example, just one day I was passing how I got involved with doing a radio show. I was, you know, I knew they had both radio and television, but, you know, just one day by accident, I just stopped by in the office, talked to two of the faculty members there. One was Cindy that has since left, but she was had a lot of experience in television. Another was Erica, who really a lot of experience in radio. And talk to them about the program, what was available, what courses to take. And that sort of piqued my interest. I said, well, there's more to meet the eye, because I really was not interested in the paper at all. Since then, I've somewhat changed my mind that I need practice in writing. I'm a fairly good writer, if I do say so myself. But it takes time writing any article. You know, for example, I prepared, and I don't know if this story is even going to make the paper, but I prepared about a little over 1,000-word article. I consider that short, but for a paper today, most stories run, you know, 500-600 words is your typical news story. You know, that's several paragraphs, but because what's happened over time, as papers have gotten smaller and smaller and smaller, the size of the stories or columns, depending on what you're writing. And I need to say something. You can write either straight news stories if you're interested in the journalism side, or if you're, let's say, more opinionated like I am, you could write a column giving your point of view on any subject matter. So, but you need practice, and that's what's terrific, and that's what the paper does. You go through the story that may or may not appear in the next paper. It is a long story, and, you know, I had feedback from two people. One is a reporter for the Dallas Morning News. Another is one of her senior editors. They both liked it, you know. They both said it's a little bit long, but that's all right, because they're, you know, it's not long for long sake. I basically turned in initially, I had a very short story, under 500 words. I think it was about 350. That the more I got into it, the more research I did, I expanded it. And this morning I came in, there was just some angle that I hadn't pursued that I made it a little bit longer. And I did this because it's a way I can sharpen my writing skills, and I'm getting input from, you know, people that really know how to make sure that a news story is in a proper format. You know, just little things. For example, if you have never written for a paper before, I'm used to doing percent. You know, like 12%. Well, that's not the proper form. You have what's called an AP style book. The proper form is percent. You write it. And on dates, I like to write the full date. Well, that's not, you abbreviate it. You know, for example, September is capital S-E-P-T dot, you know, period. So those are just little things that you pick up on. And I find, you know, for example, I had this morning, one of the Dallas Morning News, his name's James Ragsdale. He has a course that he's teaching on writing, and I'm in the lab just somewhat writing my story, editing my story, but listening to it, because he's going with beginner students on how to write a story, the various elements of a story, or, you know, what are the ingredients in terms of a headline, a lead, what kind of information you need. So I'm kind of, while I'm writing the story and editing the story, I kind of get sort of a bonus, a free course, because I was in there, three mornings in a row. And so it was interesting because he has years of experience, not only at the Dallas Morning News, but also the Washington Post. And I mention that because the book review, for example, he knew the author. They were friends or buddies, at least. They worked together when he was at the Washington Post. Now, and he was telling me something, you know, about his friend. And but he makes suggestions in terms of not only that And that was a fairly short piece on that book, Outliers. But I also had a longer article that I'm going to be covering in this radio show, by the way. And that's what I do. I repurpose my work. But he had, you know, one or two suggestions that were really terrific. You know, one was changing one word, and the more I thought about it, I said, that's a better word. And I changed it. And at least I changed it on the one in the paper. I haven't had time to really change. And I'm gonna go back because I do have the story is in essence also on this the prontpops.wordpress.com blog has that story for segment zero. So I'm definitely going to be getting into that, but. Where I started out, right before the show, I checked Drudge, just to be safe, you know, it's something really breaking news. Now, this wasn't really breaking news, but this is his lead story. And throughout the day, at least, I don't know, three or four times, depending on what's going on, he will change that lead story. And it's still on the page. So I'll be honest with you, by the time this show's over, he might have changed the lead story. But it caught my eye. Because I forget the exact headline, but it was the United States has dropped down to fifth in the world in terms of competitiveness. Now, that really got my interest. Even though I have a show, I said, you know, okay, I'll bite. I went to the article. It's an article written in Geneva, Switzerland. I forget who wrote it, but... I was curious. I said, okay, if the United States is fifth, who's ahead of us? Now, the only country that immediately came to mind was Switzerland. Switzerland has been number one I think this is the third year in a row. And many, many years ago, I spent 6 weeks touring. I was on a vacation. I was in the Air Force and really hadn't had a vacation for like 3 years. Finally, I was basically told my boss, you got to take your leave. Even that means weeks. So I said, okay. And I spent 6 weeks in Europe, largely in Switzerland, because it's somewhat my favorite country, if you will. I mean, I was in the United States. I probably moved to Switzerland, okay, for a lot of reasons. I don't speak Swiss German, or I don't speak French or Italian. They're multilingual, But I would probably move there because I do like to ski. I haven't skied in years, but I do like to ski when I have the time and the money to do so. So, okay, Switzerland was number one. And I said, okay, that one I can understand. I said, well, who's number two? Singapore. That one I can understand, too. They're both, although the Singapore... I would have maybe thought third or fourth, but anyway. So I said, okay, two S's in a row. Who's third? Now, this one, I just read the article very briefly. They said Sweden. I said, you got to be kidding. But Sweden's ahead of us. You know, that one, I'm still scratching my head. I don't know why. Now, nothing against Swedish companies, but they're very welfare state-oriented. But remember, this is ranking in terms of competitiveness of the economy and the you know businesses in it. So it's a certain perspective. It doesn't mean they're number one on everything. It's just an overall rating. So I said, okay, who's three S's in a row? Who's fourth? Now I was a little, you know, Sweden seemed out of place, but the next was Finland. Finland is ahead of the United States. So I'm going to go back and research this because I'm saying, man, I do not understand how they come up with this. Now, you know, United States fifth. I'm not surprised we're not number one. Don't take me the wrong way. I was just a little bit taken aback by who's ahead of us and why. And I really and I need to delve into it because this is something that interests me because it doesn't totally surprise me, though, because the more and more you have a welfare state where people are more and more dependent on the government and you have less of a free enterprise market economy, and I think that's truly the case, that We don't really have a totally free market economy. We are highly regulated, highly taxed. We have either the first or second. I think we're number one now in terms of the highest corporate tax rate. And remember, corporations, they're only collecting the tax from you and me when they sell the goods and services. So, some people say, well, that's good. We have no, it's not good because we pay the taxes. They're just collecting it from us, and we have to compete with the rest of the world. So a lot of countries have much lower rates than we do in terms of corporate taxation, and that's very, very important where you want to attract businesses to your economy. The reason why you want to do that, we would like to have foreign investment. We'd like a lot of U.S. companies that are abroad to bring their money back and invest in the United States, but we'd also like to attract companies from other nations. And one of the things that discourages that is the high corporate income tax rate. Again, we're number one in the nation. Most nations today are in the 20s or in the teens. We're at 35%. We're the highest. We're not competitive anymore in terms of taxes. And that is truly hurting us in terms of economic growth. And you need high rates of economic growth to produce jobs. And one of the second segment today, or I call it segment one, I start with zero and then go one, will be on the unemployment report, which I'll get into. And that's one of the reasons I was interested in this article. Because if you're truly competitive, that means you're going to have a competitive tax rate, much lower than we have now, as well as lower regulations. And I think what has happened over the years, our tax system has become a drag. In past shows, my recommendation, and I'm not going to reiterate, I've covered this in one complete show, I think a couple of weeks ago. I've kind of touched it in the past, but I mention this because this Thursday, President Obama is going to give a speech in front of the Senate and the House where he's going to reveal or explain or describe his so-called jobs plan. President Obama needs a game changer. He needs to do something in the economic arena, if you will, he needs an initiative that's really going to jumpstart or kickstart, however you want to describe it. Prime the pump, get the economy going again. Because we have been at over 8% unemployment rate every month he's been president. That's not good. It's not good for the American people that are unemployed, but it's certainly not good for the political prospects of President Obama. Because very, very few presidents will get reelected with these high unemployment rates. President Obama is politically in trouble, as is the economy. Because I'll tell you right now, the number one political issue for the 2012 presidential election will be jobs, followed by the economy. And the reason why I highlight that, and the reason why I'm going to have a special segment on it, it's not a special segment. Every month, at least one time a month, after the Wednesday, after the first Friday of the month, and the reason why it's the first Friday, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, part of the Department of Labor, publishes a report as to what the unemployment rate is and how many jobs have been created. And that happened last Friday. So I'm going to tell you what happened, but why should you be concerned? You should be a big-time concern. The economy, folks, is going into, if not in, a recession, as I am talking. That's the bad news. And how does it impact students? How does it impact faculty and staff? It is very, very difficult to get a job today. It's not that there are not jobs out there. There are jobs out there. Because I'm looking. I will tell you, there are jobs out there. And I do get, not as many as I'd like, I do get probably at least one a week, maybe more, of someone saying, we saw your name on, I'm on Monster.com, for example, but I'm on a number of sites, and we thought there might be a match. And they'll describe the position. Now, I'm very careful going over those descriptions because a lot of times, employers, if they say, we need somebody to speak Spanish or we need somebody to speak Chinese or we need somebody that knows how to program in XYZ language or we need somebody to, if you don't have that skill set, you're wasting your own time and gasoline going for an interview because the employer tells you, we require this, and you don't have it. You might have nine things. But if you're missing two or three of what they say absolutely essential, these are the requirements, you're wasting your time pursuing it. And I tell you that because a lot of people, just send it out. Well, yeah, you can. And occasionally I will do that. Where I have, let's say, everything but let's say one thing, and I think maybe they're soft on it, yeah, I'll send them a resume. But I have found, unfortunately, that, and it's happened to me, where, I remember one time I had, like, maybe 9 out of 10. And they called me, and I called them back, and we talked about it. And to make a long story short, at least over the telephone, he said, well, maybe it's not as critical. It was critical, folks. I didn't have one of the skills that they were looking for. So I wasted almost a whole afternoon. You go there, you got to fill out an application, you interview with several people, you talk to the decision maker, and then you find out, if you don't have this, and the reason why I say that, remember, they have dozens, if not hundreds of applicants. They have their pick. So if they can find somebody that at least on paper or at least in the interview says, I wasn't going to lie. Don't lie, because guess what? You're going to get caught. And then given what this job was, I'd get caught real quick because if I say I can do it and they hire me and then the Monday I go in, they expect me to do it and I don't have a clue what to do, I'm out the door. And I alert you to that because a lot of people that are employed today don't seem to appreciate, one, the sheer volume of applicants for a job and the fact the employers can be very, very picky. And a lot of them, let's face it, they're sort of, and I always ask them, when are you going to make a hiring decision? Well, some will say, it'll be about 2 months or 3 months. I can remember when I was getting out of the Air Force. This is a long, long time ago. I had two job offers. One was from, they're both Fortune 500. One was for General Dynamics in Fort Worth, and the other was in IBM in New York. I forget the town offhand. And I remember I went through the interviews. They were fine. They were great companies to work for, both of them. And I had job in it. And I had offers from both of them. Now, fortunately, the better offer and the one I was interested in was at General Dynamics. And when I got out of the Air Force, I moved to Fort Worth and worked for General Dynamics for several years. But I also, seriously was considering the IBM offer for the simple reason most of my family and relatives and are in the New York, New Jersey area. So, and the fact the countryside is really beautiful. Now, you're in the country. It's somewhat rural, but you're not far from New York. I mean, it's a drive, but there are a lot of farms where this IBM facility, and it's a big facility, don't get the wrong impression, but surrounding it is a lot of agricultural, it's farms. It's a rural setting. And I was interested in IBM as well. Well, I called them and I said, when do you want me to start? Because it wasn't so much, we'd like you to start in January. I said, excuse me, but, I'm looking for a job now. This is like September, October time frame, okay? And I said, I'm looking. I have offers from companies that want me to start either in October or November. I'll be honest with you. As much as I like your company, I'd like you to, to make a long story short, the way they worked, They were interviewing people in the last quarter, and I forget exactly. It could have been end of September or October when I interviewed, and I got the offers in October. I said, no one ever mentioned this throughout the entire if you've ever been in an interview process, you know this, especially with a large corporation, they make you talk to probably anywhere from 6 to 10 people, okay? You kind of go make the rounds, and you also go to human resources. Well, nobody mentioned that. Now, I'm not blaming the people there. I'm not blaming IBM, because this is kind of many years ago, but that's something you need to be sensitive, and that's something you need to be asked. So if you're looking for a job, ask that question. And I do, especially before, you know, when do you plan to make a decision and when do you need to? Now, a lot of them will say, hey, listen, if you're the right person, we'll hire you, start tomorrow or start Monday. But the reason you should ask that question is you're going to run into the companies that are, especially in this environment, that are not going to hire, typically, especially large companies, not so much small companies. Might only let you start either the first of a year or the first start of a quarter. So you need to ask that question. I'm trying to think how I got off on this, but so if you're this is one of those detours you wonder now there's a reason why I got here, and I've totally lost my train of thought. Oh, if you're looking for jobs, that's what you're going to run into. And for people that are employed, what they're not understanding is employers are getting literally dozens of applications. And they can be very picky. And if you don't have the requirements, you are not. First of all, if you don't meet the requirements, you're probably not going to get the interview. And even if you get the interview, if you're missing one key one, and usually someone can tell, you know, someone will say must have. If they say you must have and you don't have it, for one, that's kind of your real borderline. If you don't have two must haves, don't waste your time. Now, if you want to make the phone call or send the resume and find out, fine. Don't get your hopes up. That's what I'm trying to say. Because I do get unsolicited people, you know, we saw your resume and I look at it and remember, and this is something, these are, and the reason why I'm saying this, I know a lot of students are looking for work. A lot of staff members are looking for work because they're cutbacks. I know we're in Texas, but guess what? There are a lot of unemployed people in Texas looking for jobs. A lot of qualified people. This is the worst I've ever seen it, as long as I've been in the workforce, and I'm not your typical student. I retired from financial services in 2005 after 23 years. So I have, you're listening to an older person, a mature person, if you will. So I don't get discouraged, because I'll tell you, if you're young, they view young as cheap or inexpensive, if that's a better word, okay? They look at someone my age, a lot of experience, but not cheap. Because they know, typically, to get someone, especially if it has a long list of, we require this, 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 and this, they're going to have to pay. There's still competition. But they can be picky about it. So you don't get discouraged, but and for those that are not looking for a job, it's not like it's ever been. When I wasn't looking for a job, I tell people this at least once a week and sometimes two or three times. I would get, again, unsolicited. I'm not looking for a job. I don't have my resume on any job board. I would get unsolicited calls, mainly from the financial services, but to some extent aerospace, because I have a lot of aerospace background, saying, you know, would you be interested in working for, and usually large companies, but some were small local companies. And usually, if I wasn't looking, I would say, well, thank you very much. Now, occasionally, you'll get some that are attractive, and you go for an interview. And I think it's a good idea anyway, because you need practice interviewing, as long as it doesn't interfere with your regular job. I'm relating this because what's different now is it's very, very difficult even to get an interview, and you're competing against not 5 or 10 people or 15. It's literally dozens, if not hundreds. Depends on the job. And a lot of what I get, because I'm getting it from headhunters, I'm sort of relaying my experience on this, because I'm going to have a segment on unemployment, is I'll look at the description, and I know right off the bat, I'm not qualified. And if that is your reaction, I'm not qualified. It might be a great job. I have had, and there's one recruiter that sends me, usually about once a week or once every 2 weeks, outstanding jobs, terrific pay. Many times it's six figures and up. But I look at the requirements, A, I don't have them. And I know it. He's just throwing them out there. I'm not being naive. I mean, he has probably a mailing list of hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And if he has an assignment to get someone a position, he sends them out. And he knows that a lot of the people are not qualified. But he doesn't. What he's betting on is I might know somebody that does. So, you know, I keep the channels open, and I'm careful. I'm not going to send him my resume or say, go ahead and submit my resume. He already has my resume, but unless, A, I think I'm qualified for that position. That doesn't mean you have 100%. You might have 90, 95%. Obviously, if you have 100% and it's something you're interested in, the pay is right, the location. Now, I'm getting all, you know, the other thing I will say, I'm getting those types of mailings from all over the country. So, and that's good news, because I'll tell you something. Up until a couple of months ago, it was actually much, much worse. I'm trying to say it looks like it's slightly better. I'm just giving you my anecdotal impressions, and it's truly an impression, that it seems the market is picking up. At least the employers now are looking, and in turn the headhunters, if you will, or consultants, are looking for people. And so I don't want to be too pessimistic, because once I give you the news where we are in this segment, I'm going to be covering the unemployment report. I don't want you to be pessimistic. And that's one of the reasons why I did this. I said, you really need to, because I know a lot of students are discouraged. And I'll tell you why. And I'm kind of giving you a little teaser on this unemployment report. And you're not going to like this, especially if you're young, if you're between 16 and 19. The Bureau of Labor Statistics tracks the unemployment rate for that group, and it's above 25%. That's the highest it's been in decades. That's depression level percentages. Because the highest now for total, not 16 to 19 years, but during the Great Depression, I've used this statistics more than once on past shows, so it's the top of my head. And the statistics weren't as good then as they are now. But the worst month of the Great Depression was March 1933. And approximately 13 million people were unemployed. Now, remember, the United States population was much smaller. It was about a third of what it is today, a little over a third. So 13 million people were unemployed, but the unemployment rate was 24.9%. Now, that's for everybody. Now, keep in mind, a lot less women were in the workforce, so it's largely men. If you didn't have a lot of the what's called the welfare safety net in place that we have today. So people were truly hurting, and they were. Now, if you had a good job during the Depression, you didn't really feel it, but a lot of people didn't. You know, that's one out every four workers did not have a job. But we have amongst 16 and 19-year-olds a rate of unemployment that is higher than the rate in 1933. It's over 25%. That's terrible. It's a little, and the reason, think about it, because most of the people in that age group, you might have had a part-time job, but you're perceived as having very little skills. You don't have the experience, you don't have the skills. And that's one reason I kind of emphasized in my opening that if you have some talent, some ability, you need to practice it. If you're in school, I know you have a lot of schoolwork, a lot of reading. I got an assignment that I got to do right after this show because I worked a little hard on this article because it was important. That will be on the very first segment I'll be going over today. To sharpen it. Get some skill. It looks good on your resume. I was a writer, staff writer for the Richland Chronicle. I was an editor, photographer. And then when you go for an interview, you can tell them, you know, I did the photographies for the number of, for sporting events or whatever. Or I was terrific on layout. Because those are skills that businesses need. So, you know, volunteer your efforts. I don't know the exact day. I really should know this. I know we're having a day devoted on campus for various clubs. Now, the Richland Chronicle is not really a club. It's really, it's a newspaper. But get involved is what I'm trying to say. Get some experience. Interact with people. You need something on your resume. So if you haven't had a job, it looks good, I think. I would say so. Somewhat impressed me that you've gone beyond just taking a course. You've actually... And it doesn't have to be, let's say you're not print-oriented. Let's say you're not a writer, but you like to talk. Hey, have a talk radio show. All you got to be, if you're a student at Richland College, you can have a radio show. Now, ideally, you would like to take one or more courses in the journalism, mass communications department. You know, like we said, I'm taking right now a radio announcing course. We have courses in shooting video, for example, if you're television related. You know, having the course is fine, having your associates is fine, but you also have a great opportunity to get some experience. And again, what you're doing, and we had, for example, we had a staff meeting for the newspaper, and one of our senior editors used to work for a paper, and he does movie reviews. I believe he still does. But he's at, you know, I gave him one of the, actually I had two articles that have been my book review and the article that, the long article that hopefully will make the next paper. Reason why I say hopefully, because it's one of these time-sensitive stories that if it doesn't make the next paper, it's not going to make any paper. I don't think it's going to come back unless it gets something else breaks, okay? That and I don't think it will. But he made the remark, this gentleman that's our editor, and his name's Larry. He says, you're working at a real paper. Don't think because it's a school paper, it's not a real paper. It's a real paper because everything you're doing on the school paper, and I know this. I speak from experience, and he does. He's did it for years. Has a lot of experience, and a lot of our faculty have that experience. What we're doing, okay, it's not the Dallas Morning News. It's not the Washington Post. It's not the New York Times. Granted. But everything they do, you're doing. Now, you might be doing slightly different stories, but you're going to have photographs for the story. You're going to have to write the story. It has to be laid out. There's certain constraints in terms of space, and I'm sensitive to that because I started to write a real short story that 500, you know, my goal was 500 words or less, and I thought it was worth about 500 words or less. But the more I got into it, the more I was researching, and I said, you know, there's more to it than meets the eye here if you start to connect the dots. So it became a much longer story, a much better story. And that's what happens. And then conversely, I was going to write two other very, very, very short stories, more on economic related, that I decided to put off. You know, I could write those next week or maybe a month from now when I have time. So try to fit into your, you know, your tight schedule of taking courses. If you have the time, I know a lot. Some of you work. Some of you have been able to find jobs, but I'm learning too. It's very, 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 very difficult. But if you want to have at least something on your resume, have experience, whether it's the Richland Chronicle or KDUX Radio or KDUX Television. And that's just one thing you can have. By extending yourself, practicing your skills, you're going to get better. You're going to build up confidence that you can do it. And that's gonna come when you're interviewing. That will, the confidence that you have, employers or people that are hiring you, they pick up on that. Now, if you haven't had any job experience, and basically all you've done is gone to school all your life, you're going to be at a disadvantage because guess what I said? They're, especially at the low end, the entry level, if they have a choice of hundreds, and believe me, when you're in that situation, there are hundreds of people applying, they have their pick. And just ask yourself the question. You know, I'm looking for a responsible young person, whatever the job is. And if you've had, even if it's, and I don't want to harp on just the Richland Chronicle. There are a lot of other things you could do to demonstrate that you have some achievement, some experience that sets you apart. And that's what you want to do. So I pardon this kind of long lead-in, but because one of the segments today is going to be on that employment report, I want to, the phrase we use, now, I sort of was aware of it before I got involved with the program, but I heard the phrase before, but I truly didn't understand it. But I had, you know, the Dallas Morning News reporter that referred to that has a column. You know, this was like last year, you know, we were talking, and it says, Ray, you got to localize your story. So you hear that word a lot, localize, localize. That's a fancy way of saying whatever the story you write, you got to relate it to your target audience. Well, my target audience for Richland College is primarily students, but also faculty, also staff. And also former students and former faculty and former staff that either listen to, in this case, KDUX Radio, or listen to a podcast of it, or periodically, you know, read the newspaper. And again, you pick up on that. You know, you're going to get the vocabulary, and that's what you need, you know. I understand what localization was prior to that, but you really don't bring it home. You know, you got to relate what your, whether it's a radio show or television show, to what your audience is interested in. Because what broadcasting is about is building an audience. It's a business. The more you can build an audience, get more and more listeners, that's valuable. How is it valuable? In commercial radio, they sell advertising space, a spot. Now, if you've noticed, we haven't had any call-ins and no commercials. There's a reason for that. We're not set up for call-ins. We don't have the equipment. And it's not just the equipment. You need really a very large audience because only a small percent of your audience is going to be calling in. And out of that small percentage, you just don't want anyone on the air. You really like somebody that's really good, that keeps people's interest, that makes you look good. So you need a much larger audience, and that's really the challenge of anyone that's in commercial radio, is to build up the audience. Now, I listen to a lot of talk radio at different times of the day. Now, don't be fooled. If you're a national syndicated radio show, with several million listeners, that's you more than exceeded that minimum level that you're going to have more than enough call-ins. But many local shows, especially if you're late at night, this one gentleman's terrific late at night. 1-4. Charlie Jones. I'll give him a plug. Like his show. Don't listen to his entire show. Usually maybe the first half hour or hour, unless I have some insomnia. And even then, I usually fall asleep. But and he gets a lot of calls. Don't get me wrong. But I can tell occasionally he's probably not getting as many calls as he probably has an empty board. Because usually that's the case. He'll tell you the phone number. Now, if they're not telling you the phone number, it's probably because they have a lot of people, you know, waiting. So you need to build up your base, mainly because that makes you valuable. Because they rent out the spots. That pays the bills. You got to keep that in mind. Advertising pays the bills in commercial radio. And you also need, for another reason, need a bigger audience. For the simple reason, you need call-ins. Talk radio is about call-ins. I wish I had a huge audience to take call-ins. But I would be very insistent that they be screened. In other words, if I'm talking about 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 topics, I only want to take calls that are pertinent or relevant, on point for those topics, whatever they are, and that's the purpose of the screener. Because, you know, people will call in that, you know, hey, they might be a terrific person that you want on the air, but if they want to talk about X and you're not talking about X that day, there's no point putting them on the air or putting them in the queue that the announcer or the host would eventually over time. Now, this is years ago. I used to call some, not a lot, but occasionally I would call, it's kind of funny because I was talking again to this reporter of the Dallas Morning News, and he mentioned Mark Davis. And I mentioned, this is years ago, at least 10 or 15 at least 10 years ago. I'm not sure even when. I remember at least on one or two occasions, I would call the Mark Davis show and got in and got on the air because they're looking for good callers. It's like, I'm trying to think who said this. Neil Bortz. I was going to say Rush Limbaugh, but Neil Bortz was has been on talk radio longer than most. There are very, very few. I think he's probably the dean in terms of years. He's out of Atlanta. He's nationally syndicated. Has a great show. I haven't listened to it recently. You know, he's been in and out of Dallas several times. For some reason, he gets into Dallas, he's there, and he's out. You know, but you can listen to him online. But one day he kind of explained call-ins to his listeners, and he said, he used to play music. I could be wrong on this. He said, but as call-ins are like playing a record. You want to play good music. So I want good call-ins. It's like playing a record. If I'm playing music that my audience hates, doesn't like, there's very little interest in, guess what? People are going to change the channel. That's what you don't want. And that's the same with talk radio. When you have someone on the air, and that's the advantage of a large audience where you have a very good screener that is getting those calls to you. Now, occasionally, someone will sneak by, and what they're doing typically is lying to the screener about why they want to be on the air. They might be listening to the show, and I'm going to give you somewhat of a far. You know, I'm going to talk about, for example, the employment report, and they want to talk about spaceships from Mars. Well, I don't do spaceship from Mars. There are some radio shows that do, but they're not very many, and you probably know what I'm talking about, but I don't want that person on the air. So if he honestly says, Ray, I'd like to talk about the Martians landing in Fort Worth. No, he's not going to be on the air. But some will lie. You're like, Ray, I want to talk about unemployment. You know, I've really, had a hard time. I'm glad you're talking about the Fort. I really like to talk to Raymond about that. Well, I have him on, and then he'll switch. Okay, and that goes on, and there's nothing, let's face it, if people are going to lie, You know what most talk show hosts will do? They will immediately, there's a slider, knock them off the air, or tell their sound, get, you know, bring them down and kick them off, or press the button and disconnect. Because you, and that's what's going on. So I'm giving you a little bit behind the scenes, but, you know, I wish we did have callers. But to have callers, you have to have a large audience. So it's like a chicken and egg situation. And so, and what you want, ideally what you want, it's not just building. You want somebody that gets in the habit of listening to your show. You need to build an audience, and you do. And the only way you're going to build it, you got to get better and better at it. You got to cover stories that are interest to your listeners, and you got to be interesting. You can't, you know. One thing that I'm real sensitive of and working on is, you know, you can pick a story that's of interest to you and cover it well, but it might be, let's face it, boring to your audience. I'm real sensitive to that because I tend to do national stories. That's a generality. You know, I cover local stories as well, either Texas or Dallas. I do that. But, you know, I would say 80-90% of my stories are national stories because I'm interested in economics, politics, business. It's more a business, economics, politics type of show. So that's sort of the niche that I'm picking, because, you know, if I eventually have a break. Matter of fact, I was talking to a gentleman that we are diametrically opposed politically. I need to say that. Because I was listening to as the end of his show, and I already knew that. Because I remember, this was the last year, there was a student in my class one day. I was sitting in the EO 20. He says, Raymond, I'd like you to be one of our guests on the show. I got to give a show today. I want to be on the guest. Well, he had a panel of like four people, and the gentleman that was broadcasting, I don't know his name offhand. I need to find that out. I forget it. But anyway, he was I know he gives music, and he also, but I know where he's coming from. And not where I'm coming from. He's a big time Obama supporter. That's fine. We have a lot of them on campus. True believer. And I, you know, man, I'm getting distracted. Anyway, so I was listening. I came in today and I was catching the tail end. He was doing a music show and he wraps it up, but he's a, you know, mentioned President. Let's pray for President Obama and all that. Well, fine. You know, he knows I'm starting at 3 o'clock and or want to, even though it's a little late. So he wrapped it up. He was nice about it. We got to talking, and he's trying to break into radio as well. You know, he's in the same position I'm at. I think I can, I'm convinced I could do talk radio, and so is he. And from what I've heard, I think he is too. But it's harder these days to do that. There are fewer places to practice and get better. That's why I'm doing it. And I'm sure that's why he's doing it. Although he... Disc jockeys, there are fewer and fewer disc jockeys. But he was playing music, and he talks about music. So anyway, he just mentioned, you know, we both kind of scratching our head, you know, where do you get a break? You know, because he asked me what I was looking for. I said, listen, I'm looking to be on commercial radio. Yeah, I'm going to practice until someone says, you know, something, we've listened to all your shows. We think we have a commercial radio show that you'd be perfect for. Now, I know one of the problems I'm going to have is most talk radio shows, not all talk radio shows, but a lot of talk radio have call-ins. Now, I don't think I think I know how to handle call-ins, convinced, but I don't have the experience handling it. And you need that experience. Because he thought that you could have call-ins here. And I said, well, I don't think I think you're being unrealistic for the simple reason we just don't have a large audience. Be perfectly honest, because most of the people that would listen, our natural audience, if you will, are students in factory or restaurant college. What are they doing during the day or even in the evening? They're either teaching or attending classes, okay? Or a lot of them work, they're working. So they're not going to have time to listen over the web to your show. The best that you really can do, and that's why I have links on top of my WordPress blog, is to click on one of those links and to listen to a past show, a podcast of it. That's why I encourage you, if you decide to, let's say you want to have your own show, you're going to have to record it, and you're going to have to, and I'd be happy to tell you what I do. It's very easy. You know, I decided all my shows are on Podomatic, and what I do on my site is give you a link to either, I usually have the last four or five shows. If you click on that link, it'll take you directly to that show, and you can listen to it. It'll start right away. Or you can download either one, whichever is most convenient. And then below it, I have a list of all my shows that I've recorded. Hopefully, I believe I've gotten better over time in terms. And I have a lot of improvement. I listen to, just so you understand, and I think it's very important, I listen to every show at least once, and usually two or three times. Because I want to say, okay, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? We all have these little, like one of my problems I have, and I don't even mind telling you, is I'll say, that was intentional. I need to break that habit. I don't have it bad, but I do say, that was intentional. And you, the first step is to become conscious of that. And that's probably my number one problem. But when I first started, I was using a phrase, and I think I still use it, and for the life of me, I could not, I don't know how I picked up this habit, but I became conscious of it because I suddenly, a lot of people on the radio and television do this. And now I'm aware of it, it drives me nuts. They'll say, basically, that was intentional? No. Say what you want to say. You don't need the word basically. Explain it so people can understand. It has to be clear, concise, convincing. You got to communicate. You got to be confident. So they're verb. I won't say what one instructor called them. I call them verbal tics. So my number one is which was intentional, or basically. I have a few more, but those are the top two. I also tend to pause a little bit too long, and some of that is intentional, but I'm conscious that, okay, it's intentional, it's all right, but dead air is, you don't want dead air. So you got to be, I have a two-hour show. I have to talk for 2 hours. Now, that's because of the format. It's talk radio. I'm talking about news events. I alerted you. I'm going to be talking in what I'm doing, and I'm working with, playing with it, trying to get the right balance, and I've kind of alluded to it in the past. What I normally like to do is highlight each segment I'm going to go over in some detail, and then repeat it in glorious detail. In other words, give you the big picture, but not a quick, concise summary. Somewhat of a tease, and then get into details. So I have two segments today. And again, I said I told you I was light in material. I think we have, looking at the clock, we have about 50 minutes, a little less than, well, I started late, so a little over 50 minutes, so I have more than enough time to cover those two topics. One, it's been all over talk radio. And I heard it the first time on Monday, it was Monday evening, but It's 12 to 4. It was Tuesday morning on the Charlie Jones Show. And he was reluctant to play the clip. And I for various reasons, I'm not going to play the clip. But it's part of it's fairly long. And what I'm referring to is this. It's fairly, especially in election year, it's not uncommon for the President of the United States to address a Labor Day rally, especially if you're a Democrat. President Truman did it, but also President Obama did it this Labor Day. And he did it in Detroit, Michigan, at a General Motors plant in the parking lot. You know, it was set up, and it was largely, you know, the crowd was largely auto workers and union members. And most of the people attending, kind of the honored guest, were union leaders. You know, the head of the AFL-CIO was there, as well as the head of SEIU, and the United Auto Workers were there. So you had all the big heads. The presidents of the union were the invited, honored guests. Now, what happened was, it's fairly typical in any event where the president is going to speak, you will have at least one individual that will, let's say, warm up the crowd as well as introduce the president. Now, for this event, they had James Hoffer, he's general president of the Teamsters. He warmed up the crowd. He certainly warmed up the crowd. But he said a few things that I really think crossed the line. And it's getting a lot of buzz in talk radio. But I've also, a number of people are saying whether or not so-called mainstream media, which is another way of saying the three major networks, or the four if you include Fox, whether they're covering it. And apparently they're not. And I know why they're not covering it. I think James Hoffa really crossed the line. Now, what he was saying in terms of the audience was fine. They loved it. And apparently the president loved it because he said he was proud of James Hoffa and the other union leaders that were there. That's not surprising. I would say over 90-95% of all the campaign contributions of all the unions in the United States go to the Democratic Party. So he's not going to say anything other than the fact he was real proud of all those union leaders and James Hoffa. What happened was, well, two things happened, and there's two parts to it. James Hoffa really, I use the word threaten, but I think even a better word is broadside, really launched a broadside or attack or threat the Tea Party. Sort of like declared an undeclared war on the Tea Party. And I'm kind of chuckling because I think the Democratic Party have made a big-time mistake. And I'm just clapping. Keep attacking that Tea Party, folks. You couldn't notice. Anyone that follows this, I could give you half a dozen or more. I could give you a dozen examples in the last several weeks where various either Democratic Party office holders or people that are, you know, identified with the Democratic Party in one way or the other, as well as mainstream media, have attacked the Tea Party. They're trying to demonize the Tea Party. That's what they're trying to do. And I say, go for it. Keep it up. And the reason why I say that, and I think their mistake is, I think the conclusion that the Democratic Party has come to is that the Tea Party is basically is strictly a Republican operation, so that when they attack the Tea Party, they are attacking the Republicans. I think that's their mistake. And I think it's a big-time mistake. they don't truly understand, one, that the Tea Party is a grassroots movement. It really doesn't have a leader. And there are a lot of Republicans, a lot of ex-Republicans, a lot of Democrats, a lot of ex-Democrats, and a lot of independents that are Tea Party people, patriots, that attend Tea Party events, that are supporters of the Tea Party. And if you ask me, you know, what's, and some people have, well, what's the number one issue with the Tea Party? Now, if you've gone to their events or been active and follow the Tea, I mean, that's easy to answer. The number one issue of the Tea Party is they want government, namely federal, primarily federal, spending to be cut. Not hard to understand. Now, the mistake that I think the Tea Party made, they're not making it anymore. I think they've learned their lesson. They're sharpening that message. It's what the Tea Party truly wants when they're saying cut government spending, cut federal spending, is balance the budget. That is by far their number one issue. Now, there are other issues. They're primarily focused on economic issues, but that's not entirely the case. Because, like I said, it's a very much an amalgam of people with a broad spectrum of political views. Democrats, Republicans, as well as former Democrats and former Republicans. I'm a former Republican. I've given up on the Republican Party for reasons I'll get into later. So I don't consider myself a Republican. I'm definitely not a Democrat, but I'm definitely not a Republican. And the reason why I'm not a Republican, I got tired of George Bush and the Republican Party in Congress and the Senate running massive budgetary deficits year after year after year. I believe, I'm a libertarian that believes in limited government in terms of both size and scope. And the Republican Party, much like the Democrat, became the big spending party. They're running up the deficits. Now, that was the primary reason I gave up on. They were doing it year after year. And it was really the second administration of George Bush that I gave up on, around 2006. They became just like the Democrats. I mean, the only difference is they wanted to spend it on something else. Democrats want to spend it in certain areas. The Republicans want to spend it in other areas. Now, I mentioned that I consider myself a Tea Party person or a Tea Party patriot, however you want to describe it. And I've been active, at least blogging about it, making people aware what the Tea Party is, what it's about. And the reason why it's grassroots, most of the events are local, whether it's here in Dallas or Fort Worth or across Texas, across the country. Now, some of them are national events, usually either on April 15th or July 4th. There have been a few national events, and primarily in Washington, D.C. The key is, what are these people, you know, I always say, well, what's your hot button? And by far, the number one hot button of any Tea Party member that I've talked to, and I've talked to several, is we think the federal government is totally out of control in terms of government spending. We want balanced budgets. And unfortunately, neither the Republican Party establishment, as well as the Democratic Party establishment, has got that message. Now, they'll nod their heads and say, oh, yeah, we understand. Well, we're for you. But what I'm tired of, and what Democrats, Republicans, independents are tired of, are politicians, professional politicians, incumbents, telling us what we want to hear, but when you actually see what they've done, They don't deliver the goods. They talk the walk, but they can't walk the walk. And I've said this on many shows. I'll just say it again. You know, for example, the Republican budget that was passed by the House, it was not passed in the Senate, but the one that passed the House under the leadership of Paul Ryan, who's chairman of the Budget Committee, in round numbers, and I think they're going to be low, but I'm rounding up about $5 billion. The fiscal 2012 budget is going to be in deficit by at least $1,000 billion. Let me tell you, folks, if you've looked, if you know anything about the history of deficits, that's a mind-boggling number. We've had inflation and all that. And yes, we have very high unemployment rates, very low growth rates. And when that happens, when you have less people working, what happens to federal tax collections? They go down. Hey, if I'm not working, I'm not paying federal income taxes, and I'm not paying Social Security taxes, I'm not paying Medicare taxes. You have over 15 million people in the United States that are in that situation. Actually, it's a lot more. And you have a lot of people that are working part-time that really are looking for a full-time job and are taking part-time jobs, making much less. You have anywhere from 25 to 30 million people that are looking for full-time work. What that means is federal tax collections are way down. That's part of the problem. That's probably about 30 to 40% of the problem, is tax collections are way down. But that's not the entire story. I wish it were the entire story. That's somewhat understandable. The bigger part of this story is we've had, especially when the Democratic Party, they control both the House and the Senate. They won the 206 elections. So for 207, 8, 9, 10, they lost the 10. But for 4 years, they control the House and the Senate. And what happened? They ran off massive deficits. And at least for one of those years, Bush didn't veto it. His last year, he had right under $500 billion deficit. That was the largest deficit. That was the largest, and the Democrats were, look how bad that is, okay? They've doubled and tripled it. And that's the problem. They became big spenders. And I'm saying this to you because I know the Democrats have not got the message. But let me tell you why the Republicans, the Democrats, what they really fear. What's the single, and I've said this on a previous show, but a lot of people don't understand this. What is the single group that is growing fast, political group that's growing fastest in this country today? Is it the Republican Party? No. Their numbers are going down. Understandably. Is it the Democratic Party? No. Their numbers are going down as well. Whose numbers are going up? The independents. More and more people have become independents. And what I mean by that, ex-Republicans and ex-Democrats, they become, if you will, disillusioned with either party. Because, see, people understand that when you run deficits like that, ultimately you got to pay the bills. That means more interest. And that's exactly what's happened. The interest, even though it's relatively small now, like 6% of total federal spending is for interest, if we keep running these deficits, that's going to escalate quite quickly. So the American people, they might be slow, but they're not stupid. They know their individuals and families, their businesses, their churches have to balance the budget. They have to balance. Everyone has to balance, except the federal government. Now, I want to be fair. There's some people in Congress and the Senate that know that, that's the way things should be. The problem is both political parties are so far away from doing it. Like for fiscal year 2012, there, at minimum, there are $1,000 billion in deficit. In other words, they're spending over $1,000 billion more than they're collecting in taxes. Now, if you think that's bad, the fiscal year that ends the end of this month, the estimates are that the deficit bill $1,650 billion. This cannot be going on. There is a revolution or a revolt of the American people against the professional, political, ruling class in Washington, D.C. And if I were those people, I would be scared. People are wising up. And when you have over 30 million people looking for a job, they are not happy. They are angry. Now, what happened with Hoffa? He went after the Tea Party. He declared war on the Tea Party. And I have a clip at the very top of my segment. If you want to listen to it, it's a fairly short clip. It's a little over a minute. Now, I can't play it on the air because there's a language problem. Not the whole thing, but towards the end, there's a language problem. And remember, this is a college radio station, so there's some language, only one word, but would offend some people, especially if you're women. I think you can think of the word, okay? And he used it. You know, I can give the abbreviation, SOB. He used that term. But he declared war against the Tea Party. And he said that the union is an army, Obama's army, to go after the Tea Party members. I think that's a big mistake. Now, okay, he's playing, he's warming up, he's playing to the crowd, and they probably didn't think that was going to be caught. But I've said this before. On any political event today, there are cameras. Whether it's a phone camera or someone actually has a camera, people are taking video. And you could go on YouTube. There are several places to find this clip, and I urge you to do it. Don't take my word for it, okay? I'm calling your attention to it because I thought President Hoffa was completely, totally out of line. Now, I want to kind of alert you. I got a little message, and I'm not really happy with this. Please wrap it up by 4:40. I thought I had the 5, and we're going to either reschedule this show for another day, other time, or because I plan a 2-hour show, and I don't like to be cut off like that because we started a little late, understandably, but that's 20 minutes that I had planned to talk that they're saying I can't talk. Hey, that's fine, but I'm not pleased. But I'm alerting you to that fact because I'm going to be somewhat brief. Like I said, I was light with material, but I have more than enough material for 20 minutes. So I'm going to do about 5 minutes on Hoffa and then move on to at least give you the highlights of the unemployment report. I'll read at least the part I can read what Hoffa said. We got to keep our eye on the battle that we face. The war on the workers, and you see it everywhere, it is the Tea Party. Now let me stop right there. I didn't know we were at a war. Most of the Tea Party members largely go to Tea Party events. There have not been as many initially when it started. You know, initially you have events. You know, you get people motivated. Most of it now is online. People are getting talking. They're getting organized. And we're not after the unions. what we're after is like I said, the number one issue is federal spending. Now, why would General President Hoffa, that's a title, believe it or not, of the Teamsters, why would he be set at the Tea Party? Well, the dirty little secret is union membership has been going down, 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 down in the United States. Total, it's a little under 12%. Total. And they're only, they're only 14.7 million. And it's an estimate from the Department of Labor. I'm not making these numbers up, and I have the details there, and you can go to the Department Bureau of Labor Statistics study on this, okay? But union, for decades, union membership has been going down. That's the general trend, especially in the private sector. There is one area, though, that union membership has been going up. And what is that? That's in the public sector. It's government unions, largely teacher unions. There are others, though. That's the only growth area that unions have had. Otherwise, and this has been going on for 50 years, union as a percent, at one time, the percentage, it was in the 50s. I don't have the exact number from, but union membership was around 35%. That was at the high point. And in both percentage terms and in numbers terms, the general trend in the United States is union memberships has dropped, 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 dropped. Now, why I'm mentioning this, why are unions concerned about the Tea Party? The Tea Party wants government spending to go down. They want the budget to be balanced. What does that mean? That means less government employees. That means closing federal departments. That means less union members. Because it is the federal government as well as state and local, it is in government unions that have been going up. And to the extent that you cut federal spending, that inevitably means you're going to have fewer union members in the government sector that pay dues. And where does virtually the majority of the campaign contributions from unions go to? I'll tell you, it goes to the Democratic Party and it goes to Barack Obama. They're buddies. That's why Barack Obama is for a bigger and bigger government. That's why he's running over these deficits. It's insurance. Well, it's not insurance. To the extent that he gets voted in and the House and the Senate is voted in and goes along with the program, and from like I said, the Democratic Party controlled the House and Senate for 207, 8, 9, and 10, and they went on a spending binge. The last year of the Obama administration, you know, he leaves office in January of 2013. He's not going to be reelected. It'll be a close race, but he's not going to be reelected. He will, in those 4 years, run up deficits at right around $6,000 billion, and it might be higher because I think we're going into another recession. I think we're in another recession, and that means revenues are going to be down. So he has made, you know, again, Bush was running deficits, but a fraction up. Basically around a third of the deficit, you know, just a fraction of what Obama's done. And you can't keep running this. It has to stop. Bad news, you know. There's no Santa Claus here. And the American people are revolting. They want it stopped. So that's why Hoffa attacked. And he said he was going to take out the Tea Party. So listen to the clip. I'm not going to read the quote because I'm really pressed for time. But he declared war on the Tea Party. They're scared of the Tea Party. The union leadership and the political leadership, both in the Republican and the Democratic Party, are scared of the Tea Party. Because why? What are the Tea Parties doing? They're electing representatives, senators, and they will elect a president. That if you don't deliver on a balanced budget, you're gone in 2 years. We're going to focus in on the House, focus in on the Senate. And if we see a record that you've been a big spender, we're going to do our best to defeat you. Now, where I think General President Hoffa crossed the line in his ever-shrinking army is he said, we're going to take you out. Now, if you know anything about the Teamsters Union, they have a rather checkered past in terms of being linked to organized crime. Remember, Hoffa's father was never found. The suspicion is that he crossed his partners in organized crime, and they took him out. They killed him, folks. They've never been able to find the body. So when he uses that language, I call it uncivil. He's really, on my post, I said he's being a union thug. On my article, if it does get in the paper, he's being uncivil. I think that is entirely out-of-line language. And I think the President of the United States owes the American people as well as the Tea Party members not an apology. He should condemn Hoffa for using that language in his introduction. Because I'll tell you, folks, most people that have been involved, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, know this. The introduction, whoever's given the introduction, his remarks are usually and should be vetted by the president's own people. I think they were. And I agree with Limbaugh. I think President Obama or his staff knew exactly what Hoffa was saying. That language is totally out of line. And the president owes it to the American people to condemn it. And if he doesn't condemn it, he's a hypocrite. And I say he's a hypocrite because the language he used, and I don't have time to say this, but the language he used after the Tucson shootings was to condemn this type of language. I'm looking at the time. I got about 30 seconds. I'm not going to have time to go over the unemployment report. I'll highlight it for you because I'll do it the first thing next week because it'll be relevant. No jobs were created in August. No jobs. The Bureau of Labor Statistics does a survey, the current population survey. It's two parts. One part, the household service, determines the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate stayed the same. They also do a survey of establishments where they actually get number of jobs created, and it's broken down by industry as well as government versus private sector. There was no change in the number of jobs in August. That is atrocious, folks. And I think what that is saying, and you will see it in future months, I've made a prediction that the unemployment rate will be going above 10%. Sometime in the first half of next year, I'm predicting roughly March, could be a little later, but sometime in the first half of next year, it'll be over 10%. And it'll hit that peak and then gradually go down. I don't think it will be under 9% come election time. That's why I don't think Obama has a chance. Because when people have been unemployed as long as they have and can't find jobs, I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, they blame the president. Because the president's economic policies are to blame. During the entire Obama administration, the unemployment rate has been above 8%. Actually, for just a few of those, if you take out a few months where it was in the 8, most of the time, over 26 months, it's been in over 9%. That is terrible. And when you combine it with the fact that consumer confidence, and in the last show I went over it, so I don't have time today, has cratered. People have less and less confidence that they can find a job. And the unemployment report that was republished in September for August reflects that. No jobs were created. And I reiterate, we've had the highest over 25% for the young. It's over 16% for blacks. So you have to be, if you're black and young, you've got a big problem. So that 9%, it was 9.1, it remained unchanged. Now, what went up, now that's the official rate. There's another number, the total unemployment rate, called U6. That went up from 16.2. So what I think you're going to see in the next, well, I'm almost positive you're going to see in the next couple of months, those unemployment rates are going to go up up, and up. It's just a matter of time. Because they're going to bounce around, but what they're doing is survey. They do a survey every month of 60,000 households, roughly, and based on that survey, they determine what the unemployment rate. And that's the bad news. It's not getting better, it's getting worse. Because besides consumer confidence cratering in August, the gross national product for the first 6 months of this year only grew 0.7%. When you're in a recovery, you should be seeing 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8% rates of growth, not a rate of growth under 1%. When you see a rate of growth of under 1%, you're heading into negative territory, and that's going to happen in the next two quarters. And then we're back into a recession, and a recession will be called. I went a little bit long. The time is 4:43. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCC. My name is Raymond Thomas. Thank you for listening to the Prompt Pop Show. I probably will be on the air next week from 3 to 5. I'm really reconsidering that entire schedule for the simple reason I have to go to a meeting prior to that, and I think I might change the date and the time this show is given. I'll let you know next week what that will be, because we're really scheduling shows. But I again thank you for listening to the show. And now back to the music.